Christ Church, thank you so much for joining us here on live stream. We're so glad you could be here with us. If you haven't had the chance to join us on the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we join together to do an outdoor parking lot service at 10:30 in our Old Brooklyn parking lot. It's an awesome space for us to be able to be together, but socially distant, and worship together. And we'd love to see you at one of those services. We also want to say thank you so much for your generosity. Because of your overwhelming generosity, our church has been able to do so much good week after week after week. We've been able to help those in our church community and each one of our communities, and we're so thankful for you. There are two ways to give. You can give at our Christ Church Ohio website at christchurchohio.org, or you can also give on our Christ Church Ohio app. Enjoy the service.
Together.
On a brisk March Sunday in 1965, John Lewis led 600 marchers across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. They'd set out from the Brown Chapel AME Church and knelt in prayer before they left. Two by two, they started walking across, and the goal of this march was to bring attention to their constitutional right to vote. The governor of Alabama at the time, George Wallace, had ordered state troopers to take whatever measures necessary to prevent a march. So as the men and women crossed the bridge, they were confronted with a wall of state troopers, and behind the wall of state troopers stood deputies from the county sheriff's office. The group marched down the bridge sidewalk until they were about 50 feet away from the state troopers. The group was then told that it was an unlawful assembly and that they needed to disperse. When Lewis and the other marchers stood their ground and tried to communicate, within less than 2 minutes, marchers were struck to the ground and struck with clubs and nightsticks. They were chased over the bridge with clubs, whips, rubber tubing, and tear gas. And even then, the protesters didn't fight back. John Lewis was knocked to the ground by a state trooper and hit in the head with a nightstick. Unarmed, on the ground, shielding his head, he was hit again, and the stick to the head fractured his skull. Photographers and television cameras were on the scene, recording and taking pictures of what was happening. And the country watched in shock and disgust to see the civil rights marchers being assaulted in Selma. The sheer violence of the day left men and women beaten and bloody on the streets, and it brought even more attention to the injustice that was happening in the civil rights movement, and it helped lead to the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which prohibited racial discrimination in voting. When John Lewis was interviewed about his activism, he said, "Yes, I was beaten, left bloody, and unconscious, but I never became bitter or hostile. I never gave up. I believe that somehow, in some way, if it becomes necessary to use our bodies to help redeem the soul of a nation, then we must do it." He said it was Dr. King himself who taught him to be hopeful and optimistic and never to get lost in despair, to never become bitter, and to never hate. When I read the story of what happened to John Lewis and the marchers there that day, I think if anybody had a right to be angry, it would be him. He was treated with violence and brutality and cruelty and left beaten and bloody and unconscious on more than one occasion, all while leading the charge in the noble fight for civil rights. But instead, John Lewis lived up to his word, and he didn't become bitter, and he didn't become hostile. Instead, he kept working for peace and justice. He went on to serve in the United States House of Representatives for Georgia's 5th Congressional District from 1987 until he just passed away in this past July. When I read about his life and the things that he did, I'm amazed by his courage and strength and how he overcame such hard things without being ruled by anger and bitterness. I'm amazed that he was able to turn these horrifying moments into dreams for a better future and a hope for a better tomorrow. It feels as if we are in a moment where people are angry. Everybody seems to be at a boiling point. We're angry at each other and angry at politicians and angry at rules and restrictions and angry at brutality and the needless loss of life that we've seen. We're angry at violence and oppression, and these 4 months have just worn us down. We see videos and pictures of fights breaking out in stores over wearing masks. We see more videos and more pictures of peaceful protests being turned into horrifying moments with tear gas and brutality or riots breaking out on the streets. It feels like people are angry and it's bubbling up and spilling over. And somehow in all of the anger, we've lost sight of the enemy, the real enemy, and made enemies out of each other. Fights break out between family and friends over differences of opinions. Our civil discourse has left, and what's left in our conversations is anger and bitterness and hostility. We're all feeling it. We've all expressed it and experienced it in different ways. And many of us find ourselves at a loss on how to deal with it. What do we do next? How do we move forward from here?
How do we find light in all of this darkness without getting lost in despair or overcome with bitterness? But instead, how do we cling to our hope for the future with optimism? I want to remind us one more time of what David tells us in Psalm chapter 37. And today I want to start from the beginning and bring it all together. He starts in verse 1, "Fret not yourself because of evildoers. Be not envious of wrongdoers, for they'll soon fade like the grass and wither like the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and befriend faithfulness. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will act. He'll bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Fret not yourself over the one who prospers in his way, over the man who carries out evil devices. Refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself. It tends only to evil. For the evildoer shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land." I want us to really lean into these last two verses, verse 8 and 9, and hear what David tells us. He says, refrain from anger, forsake wrath. Fret not yourself. It tends only to evil. For the evildoer shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. I love how the message takes this and says it. It says, bridle your anger, trash your wrath, cool your pipes. It only makes things worse. Anger in and of itself isn't a bad thing. It's one of our core emotions on how we feel. There are some things that should make us angry. There are some things that we should feel so upset about that we feel moved to action. But for many of us, how we experience anger becomes the thing that leads only to more damage and more hurt and not towards anything productive. When we don't process our anger or direct it in right ways, it gets the better of us. It takes over and leads us to making terrible decisions, and it escalates and causes us to act in terrible ways. We lose our tempers, we lash out, we rage at the people who are around us. Many of us have felt ourselves getting angry and frustrated and taking it out on the people closest to us, our family, our friends, our loved ones. Or our anger has grown to such a boiling point that even the smallest things set it off, right? It's the reason it's called road rage, because you're stressed out and overwhelmed and angry, and the smallest thing in traffic feels like the end of the world. Or we find ourselves yelling at perfect strangers or taking out our anger on people in grocery stores or restaurants, and it becomes this thing that rages out of control. Anger left unchecked and unprocessed leads to wrath, and wrath demands vengeance and retribution. And we end up using our anger to justify doing things we never should have done, right? It's their fault. They made me angry. I couldn't help it. It becomes the justification for every loss of temper or every angry outburst. Because they're terrible, and they're the problem, and they're the one doing the wrong thing. They're evil. And somehow, those justifications lead us to making bad, terrible choices, and even ugly, very unhealthy actions. Listen to what Timothy Keller said. He said, cycles of reaction and retaliation can go on for years. Evil's been done to you, yes. But when you try to get payments through revenge, the evil doesn't disappear. Instead, it spreads and it spreads, most tragically of all, into you and your own character. When we get lost in the cycle of wrath and retribution, it does damage. It does damage to the people around us, and it does damage to us. It eats away at our hearts and erodes our character. So David reminds us we can not do that. Instead, we can process our anger in healthy ways. We can let go of this need that we have for retribution. We can redirect our anger and leave vengeance behind, because it's never been our job. Now, I don't know if you saw this or not, but this is the third time in these verses that David tells us to stop fretting. And he's saying, stop letting worry get the better of you. Stop letting your frustration at things take control. Stop giving permission to your anger to be the thing that directs your life and makes your decisions for you, because it never makes things better. We're never better off for doing those things. Instead, we're left feeling exhausted and worn out. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never felt better after letting my anger get out of control. Instead, what I feel is more angry and more amped up. I've never lost my temper and screamed at anybody and been like, you know what? I am real proud of myself for doing that. Instead, I feel disgusted and annoyed at myself and guilty and ashamed. And so we're reminded by David again, here's what we can do. This whole time we've been talking about this path that David gives us, we can do healthy things right now. Even when we're agitated, even when we're frustrated, we can make healthy choices that guide us into acting in healthy and better ways. Right now, I can trust in the Lord and do good. I can find ways every single day to delight myself in God. We can commit our way to Him, and we can be still and we can wait. Anger doesn't have to destroy us. It doesn't have to be the thing that eats away at our heart and character. Instead, David shows us a path on how we can turn to God. I can be still before I lash out. I can wait on God and let Him direct my path. We can be reminded to look for God to find our confidence, our security, and our hope in Him. And when we do, when we let that be our path, we're reminded that there is a God who is in control and He has not surrendered His authority. He's in control of this time and this place, of this country, of this world, of all of eternity. God is in control. And what we know about God, that we can trust Him, He's a God of justice. That the God we follow is at work. And He's not stopped, and He isn't done yet. He is the one at work making all things right. I was reminded of this quote by Aristotle. He said, anyone can become angry. That's easy. But to be angry with the right person, to the right degree, at the right time, for the right purpose, and in the right way, that isn't easy. It isn't easy, but it's doable. It doesn't happen overnight. It requires practice and thought and patience. But it also requires the reminder of we follow a God who is in control. And yes, there are evil people and there are evil things and there's bad in the world. But there will be a day, there will be a time when the evil and the wicked will be no more. It's not our job to retaliate on them. It's not our job to go looking for vengeance. Because those things don't stop evil. They don't make evil go away. They just perpetuate more evil. Instead, God says, here's what your job is. Here's what you can do. You don't have to turn a blind eye and act like it doesn't exist. You don't have to bury your head in the sand and be like, well, it'll all blow over sometime. Instead, there are things right now we can do. We can do good right now, right where we are. We can trust in God and believe that He is in control and He's not given up His authority in the world over what will happen. It's our job to be committed to working for good in the world wherever and whenever we can. We're called to fight for justice and peace whenever it's needed. We're called to work for the good of those who've been marginalized, overlooked, and oppressed. We're called to show up with love and compassion and grace as often as we can. This is who God has called us to be. And to do that, we've got to process our anger. We've got to process our emotions in healthy ways. And that doesn't come easy for a lot of us. We're working with some limited resources, but it is something we can all grow at and get better. To help us with that, I want to remind us of what Travis Bradbury said in his book on emotional intelligence. He talks about how our brain works, which are very, very interesting processes. But to sum it all up in a not technical way, he said our first reaction to events is emotional. It's how our brain is hardwired. Because of how our brains work, we respond emotionally to things before we have a chance to respond to them logically. That part of the process we can't control. It's just how our brains function. But we are in control of the thoughts that follow the emotion. We are in control. We get to choose how we respond to the emotion. Emotions can help us or they can hurt us, but we don't have any say in the matter until we really lean into understanding them, which, let's be honest, isn't a very comfortable process. Most of us don't spend a lot of time thinking about why I got angry. We just get angry and let it go. Most of us don't spend a lot of time trying to process why the outburst happened. We just try to move past it as quick as we can because we don't like how we feel about it. But what Travis Bradbury teaches us is that when we get to understand our own emotions, we can respond the way we want to. We can choose to respond in different ways. That we actually have the ability and the power to take control, even in difficult situations, and learn how to grow and change with the process. Here's what we always need to remember about our emotions. They don't always tell us the truth. We feel them, and what we feel is real, but our emotions aren't fact, because we're more than our emotions. We're more than just how we feel at any given time. And sometimes I need to say to my emotions, no, I know I feel that way, but it doesn't mean it's true. The more intense our emotions are, the greater the likelihood that they're going to be in control and dictate our actions. But they don't have to. Instead, we get to work on becoming more self-aware, thinking about our emotions, processing how we direct them, and learning how to use them in healthy and productive ways. So I just want to give us really quick a couple of ideas that Travis Bradbury gives us in his book on emotional intelligence. It's a great book to read if you want to find it. It's easily available, and it's really, really helpful. Here's the first thing he says. He said, quit treating your feelings as good or bad. Part of our human nature is we want to create simple and easy piles, right? A good pile and a bad pile. And I want to put this in good and this in bad. But he said there's a downfall to that. When we attach labels to our emotions, we're judging them. And what we're doing is we judge them, and it keeps us from really understanding. If every emotion I feel is bad, I don't want to feel bad, so I put it in the bad category and move on so I don't have to deal with it. So he said, if you just suspend judgment of your emotions, it allows them to actually run their course, and you can process them, think about them, and most of the time, they go away, and you get to move on. So we have to quit treating them as good or bad. The second thing he said is we need to start observing and looking at the ripple effect of our emotions, because our emotions are powerful. We've experienced this in our own life with the powerful emotions of other people around us. And what happens is we have to take time to watch the ripple effect of our emotions and how they impact other people. And typically you can see it. When you're yelling at your kid, you can see all over their faces the impact that has on them. When you've lost your temper in a public setting, you don't have to look very far to see how it's affecting the people around you. What happens is we get to use that information as a guide for how our emotions are bound to affect a wider circle of people around us long after we've unleashed the emotion. And then here's the last idea that I want to share with us. Lean into your discomfort. It's not comfortable to go through this. It's not comfortable to process these things. In fact, he says it's one of the biggest obstacles we face to becoming more self-aware is avoiding the discomfort from really seeing ourselves as we are. He says you'll never be able to manage yourself effectively if you ignore what you need to do to change. But he gives us options. Rather than avoiding the feelings, our goal should be moved toward the emotion and eventually through it. When we try to ignore or minimize the emotions, no matter how small or insignificant, we miss the opportunity, he says, to do something productive with it. But here's what he says. To be effective in life, we all need to discover our own arrogance, those things we don't bother to learn about and dismiss as unimportant. And he said the surprising thing about increasing our self-awareness is that just by thinking about it, it'll help us change, even though much of our focus will initially be on the things that we do wrong. He said, don't be afraid of making emotional mistakes. We all make emotional mistakes. but we never learn from them if we don't lean into the uncomfortableness of looking at them. And here's the truth. The better we become at doing this, the better we become at redirecting our anger in healthy ways. We become better at leading with grace and kindness and peace. What makes us angry, what breaks our heart, instead of leading to more evil and more violence, can be the very thing that leads us to work with all that we have to share the hope of Jesus Christ in a messy and angry world. I want to share with you something incredibly powerful that Philip Yancey said. He said, if the world despises a notorious sinner, the church will love her. If the world cuts off aid to the poor and the suffering, the church will offer food and healing. If the world oppresses, the church will raise up the oppressed. If the world shames a social outcast, the church will proclaim God's reconciling love. If the world seeks profit and self-fulfillment, the church will seek sacrifice and service. If the world demands retribution, the church dispenses grace. If the world splinters into factions, the church joins together in unity. If the world destroys its enemy, the church loves them. And what makes this powerful is our ability to do this doesn't come from some reserve. It comes from the knowledge that this is exactly how Christ treated us. Christ's body was broken to redeem the soul, not just of this nation, but every nation. Christ took all the anger, all the brutality the world could throw at him, and he gave his life to redeem the soul of every man, woman, and child who would call on his name. He took man's evil intention and countered it with grace. He took humanity's brutality and met it with forgiveness. He looked into the eye of our brokenness and mess, and he overwhelmed us with love. Friends, the world doesn't need more violence, more bitterness, more evil right now. What it is desperate for is grace, hope, and peace. And as followers of Jesus Christ, as the church, we get to be at the forefront of leading the way in this. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would be with us. I pray that where we are angry and it's leading us to do damage and hurt, you would help us. I pray, Father, where we've never even leaned into processing our emotions before, you would help us to live in the tension and the discomfort to figuring it all out. I pray, Father, that we would be able to gather our anger, that we would give up wrath and vengeance and retribution. I pray, Father, that we would connect powerfully to the heart of Jesus Christ and that we would, as your followers, be lights for hope and grace and peace. Help us, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.
I keep fighting voices in my mind that say I'm not enough.
Well,
Thanks for being with us. Have an awesome week.